Okay, folks, we're going to reconvene to open session. Please stand for flag salute. John Eric, please lead.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Director Sesenia?
Here.
Director Storm?
Here.
Director Tornowski?
Here.
Vice President Ohilski?
President.
President Wright?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Report out of closed session. Legal counsel, Mike Sykes.
Yes, at 6 p.m. tonight, the board did go into closed session under two sections of the government code. First, under existing litigation pursuant to government code section 549.56.9D1. They heard a report in regards to the bankruptcy proceeding and in regards to the ISJ, but in neither matter did they take any reportable action. Second, under government code section 549.56.9D2, they had a conference with me in regarding the item of potential litigation with the party unidentified. They heard a report from legal counsel on that matter, but did not take any reportable action. And that closed.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
My report.
Okay, first item on item 7 is the presentation and public hearing on the recycled water discharge of Los Osos Creek. And I'll turn this over to General Manager Kibley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This evening, we're going to have a presentation on the recycled water. And this presentation will be presented by our district engineer, Rob Miller.
Microphone. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Can you... Oh, there we go. You can hear me okay? The intent tonight is not so much to talk about a method of managing recycled water, but to talk about a potential water supply project. This is a presentation that is not meant to conflict with the county's plans to implement a wastewater project, but merely to raise one of the water supply options that we might consider as a group of purveyors. And we've talked to the county about this, shared some of the language that we're sharing tonight, and didn't have any resistance there. So this isn't intended to convince anybody that this is the perfect option. It's intended to inform, because there's a technical document that was released and we thought it was important enough that we do a presentation here this evening. A little background for starters. For those of you who have been studying our basin for a number of years, you know that stream seepage from Los Osos Creek is one of the primary sources of our basin recharge. We only have a few key sources, and that's one of them. And that the creek alluvium, which is that permeable soil strata in and around the creek, recharges not just the upper aquifer but also the lower aquifer, depending on the section of creek that you're looking at. For this reason, creek discharge actually was part of some of the original iterations of the wastewater project here in Los Osos. Back in the 80s, it was actually a primary method of dry weather disposal. And the thought was this creek accepts high volumes of water during dry periods such as summer and fall, and that was in the 80s a primary method of disposal. Creek discharge is currently not a part of the county's project. Primarily because of all the permitting issues, the county saw it as being something that was too difficult to accomplish in a timely fashion, so they went other directions. But at this point, now that the project's fully permitted, it's in construction, we can come back and look at the creek as not a way of disposing of water, but a water supply project as one of several options. Again, as you listen to this, we're not talking about creek discharge year-round. That's something that we'd like to avoid. San Luis Obispo, the city of San Luis Obispo, does that, and they actually are required to put a certain amount of water in the creek, and they can't stop. They have minimum volumes, and that's not a situation that we want to be in necessarily. So we're talking about summer and fall potential discharges of recycled water. Now the map looks really good on my screen, maybe a little less good on your screen, but if you Yeah, I've got my cursor there. If you look at where I'm pointing here, this is Los Osos Valley Road, running from the left to the right. And then Los Osos Creek is running from south to north, crossing Los Osos Valley Road. And if you look at the blue and the green sections there on the screen, those are what we're calling the upper and the upper central reaches of Los Osos Creek. This is terminology that's not official, but was done by our groundwater hydrologist that came up with this figure. And what's important to note is that these sections of Los Osos Creek are some of the most highly permeable sections along the entire creek. We've got sands and gravels, particularly in the section that's marked in blue. There was a creek flow study that was done back in 2009, 2010, when we actually had significant rainfall. If you remember, we had quite a wet year in 2010. Yeah, it's been a long time. And we did a technical study where we actually walked along the creek taking measurements, watching the flow in the creek disappear. So along that blue section, they were able to receive literally millions of gallons of water were able to seep into the creek and disappear in that section when it was studied back in 2009, 2010. As you get into the green portion, the upper central portion, it's still very permeable, but less so. And then when you get to Los Osos Valley Road, that's sort of a demarcation where when you get north of Los Osos Valley Road, you have more clays and impermeable sediments, and the amount of potential recharge in those areas is fairly minimal. So one thing that's interesting is in the green and the blue sections, the lower aquifer of our basin comes up towards the surface. And so to the extent that water is discharged into those areas, it actually has the potential to recharge our lower aquifer. I know I'm booming a little bit here. Hopefully that's not too distracting. This is a chart that the county provided in terms of potential uses of recycled water, both under current conditions. When I say current, I mean when the wastewater project first goes into service next summer, and then at the potential build-out of the community. And what you need to notice here is that there are a number of different uses. Broaderson leach fields are our primary use, and then there's a number of uses where you're directly applying recycled water to urban reuse, sea pines here where we are today, perhaps the cemetery. And you see at the very bottom there, 146 acre feet of agricultural reuse, and we're going to focus on that here in a little bit. But you see as the community builds out, if we have the privilege of doing that at some point, that the amount of agricultural reuse grows from 146 all the way up to almost 500 acre feet. So it becomes a significant volume of water. Let's talk about the potential water supply benefits that came out of the study. One of the things that we know is that the methods of recycled water use that are currently contemplated by the county, while not perfect, are fairly efficient at increasing the yield of our basin. That's Broaderson percolation, urban reuse, agri-use. But only when agri-use results in less pumping of the groundwater basin. And we don't have a term of art for that, but we'll say agri-use on existing irrigated crops. That's a direct offset of the amount of water that's being produced from the basin. So growers with existing basin water supplies don't seem to be as interested in recycled water currently as perhaps it was hoped. Primary reasons, they have a decent water supply currently. They have wells that are producing. Those wells represent a very low risk for them in terms of the perception of potential health issues, and also the amount of salt that's discharged from those wells is a fairly low amount compared to what they perceive may be happening in the recycled water. So at this point, there are no farmers who are saying, I want to stop pumping my well and receive recycled water. Now that could change in the future. County hopes it will, but that's our current situation. We have growers that are actually planting new crops and that they don't have a history of irrigation on those lands. So they don't have good water, their wells don't produce enough, and they're saying, I'll take some recycled water so I can plant new crops. And that's something, of course, that doesn't result in a water supply benefit to the basin because you're simply using that water for new crops as opposed to reducing existing pumping. Fortunately, those contracts are fairly short-term. I think they're 10-year contracts, but with a 5-year out for either party. So if the county finds a more efficient way to manage recycled water, it's a fairly short-term contract, and we're taking a long-term view of this issue. Because, again, the irrigation of new crops doesn't provide a benefit either to the amount of water the basin yields or to seawater intrusion reduction. So, in terms of this idea of creek discharge, based on the Cleith study, we found that shifting the irrigation of new crops, that's crops that don't currently depend on the groundwater basin, if we shift that flow to creek discharge, we would increase the yield of our groundwater basin. So it becomes a beneficial water supply project. How much? Depending on how we do it, the yield would increase at least 30 to 40% of the amount that we discharge to the creek. So if we take 100 acre feet, put it in the creek, we're going to get at least 30 to 40 acre feet back as additional yield to the basin. If we do this in a very careful way, such that we look at spring water levels and calibrate the amount that we discharge, the efficiency improves quite a bit. If we have a very wet spring and all those spaces in the soil column are already full, we may not discharge as much. In the very dry years like now, we have an opportunity to get a much higher return on investment for discharging to the creek. So if we use those strategies, the yield could be increased to the 60 to 90% level. So if we discharge 100 acre feet, we get 60 to 90 acre feet back. So you might be asking, why don't we just implement this right away? There are potential challenges to any creek discharge. And one is that you'll need an MPDS permit from the Water Quality Control Board. And the requirements that are going to be attached to that permit are currently unclear. There might be a requirement that more nitrate removal is done. There might be a requirement that salts are managed in a different way. And that's an unknown that the purveyors are looking to get to the bottom of that with a little focused study where they have a consultant look at the water quality requirements, meet with the regional water board, and come up with a go-no-go on the issue of an MPDS permit. In terms of the physical infrastructure to actually get the water to those green and blue lines, the upper reaches of Los Osos Creek, that's fairly straightforward. The pipeline runs right by it on Los Osos Valley Road, fairly modest segment of pipeline and a simple outfall for dry weather discharges. I don't see any real physical complexity there. But if we have to enhance the water quality and do more treatment, then that becomes more complicated and more costly. The cost benefit of this whole approach also depends to a great degree on how much water is available. To the extent that water is used at Broderson and there's a bunch of urban reuse going on, if we only have a small volume of water available because of conservation, the cost benefit may not be there. You know, to get 10 acre feet of yield out of this, not worth spending millions of dollars. But since the sense is that there would be a growing potential benefit if there's at some point development within the community. And 150 acre feet of potential discharge is a significant volume. We have a lot of federal and state environmental agencies that are involved with creek discharges. National Marine Fisheries is one, both California and U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And these are agencies that, of course, take a different perspective than we would in terms of water supply. And, again, we want to do some early review with those agencies to see if there are fatal flaws or fatal costs that would make this option not viable. But to staff, it appeared that there was enough potential items in the plus column that it was worth finding out more, particularly as we're looking at discharging the recycled water onto fallow ground to grow new crops. This may be a way to recapture some of that water and result in a benefit to our lower aquifer. So these are some of the next steps that are being contemplated by the ISJ group, and you'll be hearing more about them in the future. That concludes the bulk of my presentation. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Rob. Any questions off the bat from the board? Okay, seeing then, open up the public comment. And if you can hold the answers to the end. Thank you. Anybody in the public have a question?
Where's the microphone?
It's over here. Okay. Can you make this, state your name, please, for the record?
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'd like to thank Rob Miller for a very succinct and quality report on this the strategy. As your board knows, presently the wastewater project does not have a home for all the treated wastewater. The urban reuse component is barely 50 acre feet per year right now. The dryland farmers are getting about 65 acre feet per year. So this looks like a great opportunity to engage in a groundwater recharge project. As Rob mentioned, this is not a new idea. This has been around for literally decades. I think it's something that, based on my discussions with Monica Hunter, who's a local water board member, she's very supportive of this, and I think that would extend to other water board members. It's kind of a yin and a yang, if you will. Broderson was always considered a wet weather recharge site, and this creek discharge, I think, is perfect for a dry weather or summertime recharge. The amount of water that can go in there, Rob mentioned, 200 acre feet perhaps, 250 acre feet. And I know there's a lot of interest in ag exchange. Maybe the ag exchange is something that can come later and the creek discharge earlier. Maybe, you know, maybe that's the way it would work out best. So I think the permitting can be accomplished quite easily. This is a low-tech solution, very little cost, I think you'll find, at the end of the day. And I support it fully. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Keith Weimer, homeowner in Los Osos. I did a review of this tech memo, and I emailed it to the directors, so I do have a few copies here if you need it. I just want to, when I was at the Utilities Committee, I thought what was decided there was that there would be a recommendation to review all options because there is an issue with where the recycled water goes, and you know, to have good options for that is important. Also, you know, Broderson has its uncertainties. If that has to be cut back, we're going to have to figure out where that goes. But right now, there's maybe 100 acre feet of water that has nowhere to go. So definitely we need you know, to look at options. Now, Rob put up a slide that said that certain types of reuse were the best types of reuse or had the most benefit. They included, you know, three different things. I think it was ag reuse, and it was urban reuse, and it was Broderson. And it looked from that slide as though all of them were the same. Well, the EIR and the fine screen report and all the other reports that have come out point out that urban reuse has the greatest benefit on seawater intrusion because it directly offsets the pumping of the basin. So I recommend and I request that before any decisions are made on this or recommendations that you ask for a further review of options for urban reuse. That will provide the best option. But a quick just overview of my findings on this. I mentioned I sort of criticized Mr. Ohilski because the parties should require a uncertainty study with any of these modeled types of benefits. I mean, the model has not been accurate on seawater intrusion or anything else, and 20%, in fact, this study, this tech memo didn't even mention the 20% that is recommended in the basin plan as a margin of safety. I suggest that this may have a much higher margin of error than just 20%. Why not do direct tests? Why not put, you know, markers in the water, put it upstream, and then see just how much you're getting downstream? They can do that. I see the director from Cambria. You know, that's what is happening in their stream. I mean, they know that water comes down. Let's find out how much actually comes down and quit using the model. So, you know, before we start finding places to put recycled water that are questionable, we should be looking at urban reuse. The other thing that I have a problem with here is that you know, the actual benefit of putting water in the ground, since it has uncertainty, is less than one half of urban reuse. But the point is that we should be looking at how, if that water is going down and it can be captured down below, then we could put wells in that area and we could capture it. So that's one option that should be looked at.
And also, Keith, I think, Ann, you said you needed a copy of his comments. Can you give Ann a copy, please, for the record? Thank you. Okay, next speaker, please.
Thank you for that comment. I agree with Keith Weimer on his evaluation. And I'd like to point out that Keith hired the groundwater engineer that did the 84 basin study for his view and his evaluation of the basin's sustainability. So I don't think you have to, this is not just something off of his shoulder. The other thing I would like to say, I think there's a lot of pressure, I don't know who is for, who is against, to develop these 1,700 vacant lots. And I view that there's some motivation to this presentation to show that there's more water than we really have. And I'd also like to point out that I have been up to the creek during the rainy season and watched the great flow of water. I've been up in the dry season. I've inspected the area personally very closely. If you don't have rain, you're not going to have a lot of water coming down that creek. The governor just told us we're in a huge drought. The climatologists have told us that this drought may be 100 years. So I guess my point is that I think this particular tech memo is somewhat hopeful. There is no assurance that even if you did get the county to go along with this plan, which they don't seem to be interested in at the moment, that you would still have to, it would be a wait-and-see project to see how much you could actually go. So I have a lot of questions about this particular view that you're going to get 100 or 200 acre feet more out of the basin from doing this. I would, however, recommend, like many other cities do, that they allow citizens to come into the water treatment plant and gather 300 or 400 or 100 gallons of water to water their exterior water or do whatever they want to recycle it within the basin. And I think that's a very viable option that could be looked at as well.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
I'm Frank Freiler. I've been on this board once for 3 years, and I have a, my topic is going to be California Public Records Act, which is similar to the freedom of...
Frank, excuse me, you have to address the presentation.
Right.
Pardon?
This isn't general
this
public.
This is not public, okay, public comments.
Next.
This is the comments on the presentation of the creek discharge.
You want general.
It's next.
You want general.
That's next.
Oh, I thought you said this was public.
This is
on the presentation.
Oh, you didn't say that.
Yes. Thank you.
You don't have to go far because it's right next.
Okay. Any other speakers?
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. In Paso Robles, the toxic Nacimiento water filled with mercury is going into ground. It's being put into creek beds or river beds, as I understand, so that it can be, get filtered to get down in and replenish their lower aquifer supply. And so I think the possibilities are great, but a bigger question is the real, as Keith said, the farmers, if they stop pumping the water out and take the recycled water, that was the promise that the county had for us. Now, the reason the farmers don't want that water is because it is not treated to a degree that doesn't have a lot of salts in it, which is damaging to their crop production. So why are we, is it okay for the county to not be able to deliver a product that is not meeting up to the promises of having farmers be happy to take it in exchange? I want that to go back to the county, and whether you do it through the ISJ or wherever you do it, that's the most important bulk of the water to get the farmers to take our recycled water is of top priority. And until we do that, some of these other things are, again, just Band-Aids. We need to get that recycle plan working, and I think it's the county's responsibility to further treat that effluent, whether they do it through ponding systems or whatever. But I would ask that you continue looking at other options besides this creek disposal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Before my time starts, can I have a slide put back up?
Okay, Rob.
That one? Okay. Richard Margetson. One of the reasons I asked this slide to be put up is under the total column, 780 at current conditions, 1120 at build-out. That's 340 acre-feet difference, Rob. That's a 44% increase in potential for recycled water. The LCP build-out number is not going to increase 44% from 14,000, whatever it is now. And I don't believe that current number for 780 is correct either for current conditions. If you look at the utilities report tonight at where the CSD alone is going to be at by the end of the year and factor in the indoor consumption that will be going to the plant, I think both those numbers are inflated. And the reason I mention that is what number are we actually talking about that's going to be available for this? I mean, we're at 60, 65 acre-feet of contracts that are signed now at 30 or 40% recharge. We're somewhere in the 18 to 25 range for potential acre-feet for this. And Al brought up the governor's statement. If that reduction is going to be feasible, will there be any water available for the dry land farmers after the 5 years? Because the mitigation factors for seawater intrusion, like he said, they're all inland. I mean, in town, as opposed to on the edge of the basin out there. The mitigation factor for the dry land farmers is zero. We're basically just dumping that water at this point. If you could address those and where we are, because I think the 780 number is wrong, and I definitely think the 1120 number is wrong.
Okay, thank you. Any other speakers? Okay, CNN, we'll bring it back. Rob, you have any answers to your questions?
Yeah, a few follow-up comments. I think a number of speakers referred to a review of options, including urban options for recycled water. I agree with that comment. I think as part of the work here, as you see this come back, that should be part of it, including things like uncertainty in the use of wells to be able to actually yield the benefits that we're talking about here. Water quality is going to be a big issue, both for potential ag reuse, even urban reuse or creek discharge. The salt levels in this water are not a known quantity today. And that's going to be, I think, something that is going to come up within that first year of operation of the wastewater system. What are the salt levels? How many water softeners do we have throughout the community? What's the impact as it flows through the community? Since those are just important unknowns. But there are examples of communities who have addressed that, and Cambria being one recent one. Richard mentioned a little bit about the water volumes, and I tend to also look at those volumes and wonder if, with all the measures that we're currently putting into place, whether those may be overstated. We won't know for sure, of course, because we've also got schools and commercial and other things. We'll have those numbers here, I suppose, within a 2 years as everyone connects. But I think it is fair to say that you view your volumes with a critical eye, both future and current volumes. I think that's wise. And then again, continuing to look for inland mitigations as those become possible. To date, the county's been unwilling to consider use on a single-family residential basis, just because there's not a lot of state models for that. And those of us would love to try it, but the lack of statewide models, I think, has been a deterrent for that. But there will be more discussion coming on those options, and this is just one to talk about tonight.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bring back to the board any questions or comments? Director Storm? No? Director Holsky? No,
thank you for the presentation.
Yeah, thank you. Director
Sassania? Yeah, I definitely would agree with that point about the numbers in the totals column not seeming to match up with the increase in population numbers that we expect out of the LCP. One way or another, it seems like we're going to wind up paying to treat the water to a greater degree, whether we put it in the creek or for the farmers to reuse. And it's not quite as simple as saying to the county, treat it better, because we're going to pay for it. So, you know, whatever we tell the county to do, recognize that we will be paying for it. It's just not that simple. There was something about markers in the water instead of models. Is that something that happened as part of this study? Have we taken it to that level, or is it? I mean, how did we calculate the anticipated benefits?
There was some physical work done, but no markers. I think a tracer study would be interesting, particularly if we could get enough rainfall to actually result in the same conditions we had in 2009, 2010. If we get serious about this, I think there's wisdom there, and we could pull it off because we do have wells that are potentially down gradient. If this seems to pan out, then I think that would be in our future.
Thank you.
Director Kurnowski. Yeah.
When are we talking about doing this in the best scenario? I mean, by next year, we'll have the system that we designed and started to build online and be moving forward and so on, and it's going to settle out and so on. When would you think this would be viable if we sort of work the numbers and work the money and so on?
I think we're looking in terms of years. Permitting and those types of activities can happen shorter term. Particularly now would be a good time, whether it's this or another water supply project you see from the governor, permitting and funding it's a good time to do that. But in terms of the actual operation of something like this, I think you're years out, because I think the county is going to seek to use Broderson first, provide water to the schools, and it's going to take a while to get everybody connected. I'm not sure if we know exactly how long that's really going to take, but it's going to take a while.
Thank you. I didn't do that.
I'll blame Lou.
Okay, so as far as the timing goes, what do you suggest for us as far as our participation in this? What's your best timeline?
I think we take the next steps in the coming 2 to 3 months. Look to get a consultant on board, a focused study, not hundreds of thousands, and maybe a $20,000 effort to look at this and other options at a 30,000-foot level, talk to the agencies, identify the water quality issues, not just for this but for other water supply projects, start that dialogue with the regional board, and then come back to this board for an update.
Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to number 8, public comment for items not on the agenda. Just step forward and state your name. Now, Frank.
I'm going to start with a point of order. It does not say that the presentation is anything but an information-only topic, and public comment after that, it was on the agenda, so that's why I stood up. I may be over 10 years past my duties on the board, so I may be a little rusty, but for me, it needs to be a little bit more clear than many years back. Getting back to what I was talking about on the California Public Records Act, similar to the Freedom of Information Act, except for the fact that the people have the right of access to information concerning the conduct of the people's business. That is the baseline of the Public Records Act. Now, the purpose is that the California access to public records has been deemed a functional interest of citizenship and has emphasized the maximum disclosure of conduct of government operations to be acted promoted by the Act. Implicit in the democratic process in the notion that government should be accountable for actions, in order to be to verify accountability, individuals must have access to the government files. Such permits checks against the arbitrary exercise of official power and secrecy in the political process. Now, I've tried to file several questions about the Bay Ridge sewer system, how it got to the situation it's in now, and what it's going to end up being. But as a homeowner up there, I find that it comes down squarely on the property owners, and they, in my best estimation, were never, ever invited to come to this last meeting, two meetings where resolutions were made to speak their piece. And I think that is in contrast to what the Public Records Act says. Now, I filed with the manager, district manager, and it is says in this combination of the Records Act and the Public Records Act that 10 days is the time that the okay. What's that mean?
Your time is up. You have 3 minutes. Thank
okay,
you.
Your discretion, though.
Finish your thought.
That it should be exercised in our district. And if someone comes in with questions, they should be acted upon. They shouldn't be shoved aside. They shouldn't be ignored. Because this Bay Ridge situation is impacting a lot of residences that didn't know one thing about the fact of how the costs are going to be distributed for the repair of that sewer system that's been in place for 20 years. Thank you.
Thank you. And next speaker, please.
Peggy Pavic, Los Osos. I have a couple questions and concerns regarding this board's possible acquisition of Mr. Kellaway's property, the old 10th Street gym facility. I have a three-part question. Exactly what benefit or value will the acquisition of this property give to the citizens of Los Osos? Two, where is the funding for this building and the remodel that will require it to suit the needs of the general manager be coming from, and has it been budgeted for? I can't believe that you've all been so non-transparent that you thought you could just flip this through without any community approval. Very few of the community know about this acquisition possibility. And frankly, we don't have the money, and we don't like the grandiose schemes that you're coming up with, the visions of grandeur that you're board and your general manager are showing. What we need are people with common sense to show that you have respect for the finances of the residents of this district. Remember, we're the ones paying your salary, and you guys all voted for that salary. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
My comment is generally going to be directed towards the drought and the impact of it. However, I would would support the last speaker's remarks. We are facing a $170 sewer bill coming up. We're also facing a water infrastructure bill. So spending is a critical decision on the board's part because we are the ones that are going to pay for what you spend. So we just heard somebody suggest a $20,000, I think Rob Miller suggested a $20,000 consultant to be hired to deal with his presentation. And, you know, these things are adding up quite rapidly. The capital improvement project for the new water basin management plan is going to be another burden on us. So that's the end of what I'm going to say about affordability. I'm an affordable housing advocate, and I've seen affordable housing units flipped and shrink the whole possibility of an average working person that makes about $10 an hour to have housing is almost impossible to find. So getting back to the drought, one of the major European papers, The Guardian, had it front-lined that California was in a drought and that there was an executive order to conserve 25% more water. That was on CBS News and NBC News last night. It was also on public broadcasting as well. This is a big issue, and I think you're making a huge mistake if you downplay it at all. And I think you should walk very carefully when you start doing things like issuing will serve permits, adding more draw to the basin, listening to these promises and expectations that you're going to have more water. We don't have, the Los Osos Creek doesn't have water when you don't have rain. I mean, come on, folks. It's fed up on top of the hills. So, you know, I have to say, the water supply issue, because impacted by the drought, is so severe all over the state that nobody's going to let us take their water, even if we pay them for it. We have to deal with the local community. And the 1,100 units that were allowed to develop pulled in seawater intrusion back in 1980. We've been in overdraft for 30 years.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Keith Weimer, Los Osos homeowner. And I just wanted to reiterate, and I will continue to, that my concerns about the basin plan that is going forward. I spent a lot of time, and so did the sustainability group and other groups, providing input on that basin plan, attempting to make it a stronger plan with better conservation, better recycled water use, including urban reuse. And then also talking about the model and the margins of error and the fact that it does not consider climate change. You know that the basin plan, the purveyors joined with the National Estuary Program in 2013 with the U.S. EPA, and they did a climate change analysis using the same model. The model showed during that analysis that all the projected increases from moving wells inland and moving them to the upper aquifer, that projected increase of 2450, which our safe yield is now, our sustainable yield, so-called sustainable yield, the basin plan says it'll increase to 3,500 acre feet just by moving wells around. Well, the climate change analysis showed that that would be completely negated if you figure climate change factors. Precipitation, increased heat, temperatures, and sea level rise. And the climate change analysis didn't even assume as low a rainfall as we have now. It had about almost 12 inches of rainfall, and we're at about 6 to 7. So when you see a basin plan that says, you know, you move wells, and by the way, Eugene Yates, the foremost authority on it, said you're not going to get increased yields by moving wells. There's a lot of uncertainty regarding that. Even the peer review by Stetson Engineers showed that there was a lot of uncertainty in that. So for the basin plan to say we can support build-out by moving wells and then to only figure in a 20% uncertainty when we have a 50% uncertainty just with the drought is absolutely, irresponsible.
We have conditions now, including the impacts of the wastewater project that could impact the upper aquifer. We have potential impacts from the drought. We have, climate change impacts. To use a model that assumes 17 inches of rain is just not appropriate. So I'm just wondering, and I'd like to ask Rob since he's still here, with the governor's executive order, which calls for a 25% decrease in water use under the 2013 levels, whether the basin plan goals are not already obsolete.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson. I asked the question at the last meeting if Bay Ridge had been informed of that being on the agenda. I just think you heard the answer. It was irresponsible. It's your duty. As far as the Keith's comments about the basin plan, if you think the county's going to solve all the issues with the wastewater project, you should have listened to Supervisor Gibson 2 weeks ago, who stated that in and of itself, Broderson will stop seawater intrusion. In and of itself, Broderson. Anyway, but the bulk of my public comment is governor's declaration, seawater intrusion in this community, all the water issues. When did moving the meetings to Sea Pines and acquiring a new facility for offices become the priority of this district over everything else that needs to be done? The major priorities of trying to keep this community sustainable? I'm sitting by the door tonight. There was a couple who came because of the curtains. They left. They didn't know that that was the door to entrance. A couple I didn't recognize. They were looking for how to get in here. It wasn't my job to go out and tell them. I already had let two people in that didn't know where the meeting was. But what's really sad is yesterday, staff came and got the rest of supposedly your equipment at the community center. We now have no building in this community for a direct hookup to Channel 20. The box to connect to Channel 20 from the community center live was taken out by AGP. All of the other equipment was taken out by the CSD staff. The screen, the overhead screen, that has been there for a decade was removed. No consideration of asking the center, you know, is that going to be an inconvenience for you right now till you get another one? Nothing. It just went. County's going to hold presentations there in the upcoming, starting the next month. We have to now go out and buy a screen. Well, that screen sits in your storage. You now have no direct link in this community for Channel 20 with all that's coming down the pike in the future. The county meetings, everything.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Howdy. I'm Valerie Darnell. I happen to be the manager of the community center. Richard kind of stole my thunder there. I was in a meeting yesterday when the CSD showed up to reclaim your property. Your property, it's yours. You can have it. That's fine. I think an advance list of what properties were going to be removed would have been a nice thing. At that point, I would have known that screen belonged to you guys. I didn't know it. I have renters that are expecting to put presentations, oh, maybe for a loved one, all their memory pictures that they were going to put up for a memorial, and now Just like this, we have to go out shopping, choose, purchase, and install a screen while your screen is sitting in storage. Just a little communication. I mean, I know none of you were raised by my parents. My parents said common courtesy is a very important thing, and I think that's something that kind of went right out the window. How important was it to take that screen down without giving us a notice that you believed it belonged to you? It would have been nice. I think that's about it. So now I have to call a bunch of people and say, oh, we don't have a screen. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker.
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I'm going to say something that's going to be unpleasant and uncomfortable, but I'm going to return to a subject that I brought up many times, and that's about whether Ms. Kivley actually is helping our district to any degree. All I've seen is a failure to have transparency, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. The fact that we do not have
Mr.
the
President?
Live stream videos coming out of the AGP Center is...
Okay, we'll declare that out of order. Thank you.
Mr. President, it would be very nice if they would address their comments to the board.
Oh, I'd gladly do that.
Okay, continue then.
Yeah, please. I don't think she has the right to tell me I can't peek and speak at public comment. I'm questioning not her personality. That's of no interest to me. I'm questioning what results we are getting out of the year plus that she has been our manager. And the option that you had to have Ron Muntz, the top water conservation man in the entire county, who lives here locally, who knows everything there is to know about water, was who we should have had as our general manager. And if Ms. Kivley was doing a good job, we would still be at the community center. We would not be going out spending money we do not have. We didn't have money to build a area for our workers at the utility building to have a remodel, update, or to have a new building. What is this, and when did we hear about this?
We didn't.
We don't hear about it now because the committee meetings, thanks to Ms. Kivley's suggestion, have all been canceled. We get to have them every 3 months. I guess water issues are not important. We have to come here and have all the long discussions because we can't vet anything in the committees, which is where things were done in the past. I've been coming to these meetings for 14 years. I have never seen such a failure of management at this point. I just want to read a little something, too. This is my right also. This is out of the Atwater or the Mercedes Sun Star, discussing her past employment. And she was let go because she was not doing a good job as a manager. Everything isn't solid in Atwater as employees try to pick up the pieces from Kivley's tenure, according to Planning Commissioner Frank Warchol. A heavy weight has been taken off the shoulders of Atwater with the termination of City Manager Atwater, Warchol said in an email. You can almost see it in the eyes of city employees when they come to work now. The thousand-mile journey to our fiscal recovery has taken its first important step. Kivley's apparent lack of leadership has been devastating. Now, if you chose the top water manager in the county, we would be moving ahead, and I think we would be very progressive. But if we continue with Ms. Kivley, we'll be in bankruptcy at the rate things are going, I think, as possibly some of you must be a part of. I don't know how you can agree to give her raises and keep her here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. First, I'm going to read a note from some of my friends, the Grisantes, who have owned a lot in Pasadena Drive since 1998 and hope to sell in the near future. It's a great opportunity for us and the community to sell at this time as part of the Pine Street Los Osos Valley Road project. We had planned to be able to retire and build on this property, but too much time has passed, and it is time for someone else to have that privilege. We want to stress that this is not an increase in water use, but a transfer and net decrease in water use. The opportunity of the community to have a much-desired dog park and an expanded library are priceless. Please vote for the issuance of will serve letters so that these transactions can take place in the CSD area, as the other Los Osos water purveyors have already done so. That's from Debbie and Jack Grisanti. From Jen Harper, I just want to thank the board. I want to thank Ms. Kivley. You know, we've had tumultuous 10, probably even since the beginning of the CSD, and I think everybody's doing a good job, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any other speakers? Okay. Seeing none, okay, we'll close out public comment. Move on to administrative and committee reports. Chief Panera's Fire Department report.
What, do we have a chance to ask any questions or bring up anything about public comment? There was a question about whether the basin fan goals were still viable. That was one I had. I also would like to address the letter that the community center sent to this board. I don't think the entire letter needs to be addressed, but I do think there's one question in that letter that needs to be addressed, and that is who made the decision to move the meetings from the community center here to Sea Pines? Which directors were involved in that decision, or was it only the general manager? Because I know, for one, I was not consulted at all, and I would like an answer to that.
Okay, thanks.
And also, the priority for a new building. When did that arise? Was that a priority of the Craig Baltimore board, and is that still a priority? Those are some of the questions I have.
Okay, in regards to the building, what that was under the last board, and what is at this stage, what it is more of a cost-benefit analysis for space saving. There's not a final commitment to it that will come before us to decide. In regards to moving the meeting to here, I will take the blame on that. I asked Ms. Kivley to look around for a better option, and we came up with this one. So if you want to blame somebody, it's me.
So there were no others involved?
No.
I'm not sure that's appropriate.
So noted. Okay, thank you. Let's move on to administrative and committee reports. Fire Department Chief Daenerys.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, both here and on TV. Appreciate the opportunity once again to come before you with a chief's report. Before I start, I'd like to quickly make a couple comments on some things that are going on that I just want to talk about. I've been before you for 10 years. Some of you have been here as long as I. You understand that I don't typically try and, I'm not an alarmist, I don't try and make a lot of stuff out of small things, but I have some serious concerns with the drought and its impact on vegetation and wildfire risk in the community, alongside our community, around our community of Los Osos. So I wanted to spend a couple minutes on that. You have before you a pamphlet called Are Wildfires Coming? Are You Ready? There's a number of them in the back. I strongly, strongly encourage everybody, no matter where you live, to take a peek at this. It's a great little pamphlet. If you live in the middle of the numbered streets, it doesn't mean you're immune to wildfire. And I'm sure, because we're a close-knit community, there's lots of you who have friends. And so if you have friends who live out there, I certainly suggest that you take one of these and give it to your friends. This week and last week, County Fire, CAL FIRE has responded to vegetation fires throughout the county. We're already getting them now. You probably saw in South County in Santa Maria Riverbed, 4 or 5 acres. We've had fires in the eucalyptus on the mesa. We've had fires in the Cambria area. We've had fires near the grade. We've had fires on North County. We are hiring firefighters next Monday. That is approximately 45 days earlier than we did just a couple years ago, and that's because of the severe drought that we're in. You've been talking about it. I'm very interested in some of the things that the community has said, but as you're on the grounds firefighter, I just really want to drive that in. And so what are What is South Bay Fire Department Station 15 and CAL FIRE doing to support you? We will be doing hazard abatement this year, as we always do, and that's coming. We're working with the general manager in the district, the Fire Safe Council, to bring in a chipping day. Originally, we had not planned to do that, but because of the drought, we are looking at doing that, and we're closely coordinating with, again, the general manager and the Fire Safe Council to fund that. I don't have a lot of details for dates, but that is coming. So the other thing I can tell you is the state is taking this very seriously, and they're hiring defensible space inspectors, and they're coming in actually next Monday as well. And those folks will be concentrating in the Cambria area. You've seen a lot of that in the news lately. Once they're through with Cambria, they're going to work their way through the high-risk areas. And I can assure you that the Highland area, the Cabrillo Estates area, the Baywood, or the Bayview Heights area will all get a very good defensible space inspection. And in years past, if there was a brush in someone's yard or trees in someone's yard with water in the ground, therefore water in those brush, it was not a fire hazard. This year, that same brush is going to constitute a fire hazard, and if there's any dead in there, it will constitute a fire hazard, which case you will get a LE-100 sheet. That's just the term of it, law enforcement sheet number 100, and it will detail the violations. And then somebody will come out, as we always do, and reinspect it. And if those violations aren't corrected, as always, the chance of a citation being issued will come. So I strongly encourage you now, in early April, to start your hazard abatement, regardless of where you are, and start to clean up your stuff. And in June 1st, the inspectors will be out there. The second thing, as I continue with this theme, is I just received an email. There's going to be a webinar, and it's posted on the South Bay Station 15 website associated with the CSD, and it's on family preparedness, family emergency preparedness. It's hosted by four ladies, and its emphasis is on families from a emergency responder, an emergency response person who's also a mother. Again, the community is filled full of young families, and I think that would be a good thing to do. So that's all the details on that webinar coming up. So off my soapbox into my report. In the month of February, Station 15 responded to 102 calls. Four of those were simultaneous or back-to-back. One of those four calls required advanced life support. Of the 102, 67 were medical aids, 25 requiring advanced life support. We had CAL FIRE firefighters responding in with the ambulance to the hospital two times in the month of February. Six traffic collisions and five fires were also reported. Company 15 came back to assist the full-time staff a total of eight times. In administration, we detail the continuing hiring process for several of your new firefighters and some of the training that they've been going through. In item five training, it details the third of four continuing professional training courses, and some of your firefighters attended that. Item six of training details a planning section class that we hosted here in San Luis Obispo that was attended by folks from all over the California, and including one individual from Louisiana, which was kind of fun to understand how or to hear how they do it. In special projects, it details a birthday party that was part of a fundraiser for Baywood Elementary School. The information that came out in the water bills in cooperation with the CSD, and we do thank them for that regarding the ISO rating adjustment. Item 9 talks about some new brakes and front end alignment on your command vehicle. And item 10 talks about some warranty work and routine maintenance that was done on your new Medic Engine 15, which is a year and a half old now, I guess. It's not really new. That concludes my report. I'm available to answer any questions if you'd like.
Okay, thank you. Board, any questions for the chief? Just a comment on the ISO upgrade. It's been about a 10% decrease in the fire rates in this area. So just for information. Okay, thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes,
I was going to say this in my report, but unfortunately Phil will be gone by then. But I wanted to thank Chief Vanaris and the South Bay firefighters for conducting the fire extinguisher training for our staff at the LOCSD. We appreciate their support and their help.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Chief. Okay, next is Utility Department report. Margaret Faulkner.
Didn't need to turn it off. Good evening, Board. My name is Margaret Faulkner, and I'm here to report on the Utilities Department for the month of February. Water production was 13.1 million gallons, which represents another decrease by approximately 3% compared to last February. Water consumption was about 11 million gallons for the period of January 10th through March 11th, which is approximately 7% decrease from last year. And the revenue generated from the billing was $109,092, which is a slight increase by approximately 2% compared to last year. So below on your first page is runtime hours and production information for each of the well sites. And as you can see, the South Bay Upper Aquifer well was placed into service on February 25th, so there was a little bit of production recorded there. As far as seawater intrusion is concerned, we did send out a full-page mailer that was both in English and Spanish, and it went out in our February and our March bills discussing the possibility of the Stage 3 emergency tonight, and a copy of that is in your packet also. Water conservation, we keep promoting this. We have a Facebook page. There's, we always encourage the, you know, our water customers to come on in and get some low flow fixtures, and they are going like crazy. We've been getting rid of a lot of shower heads, and they really like those hose nozzles too. So, the county retrofit program is also continuing throughout the district for homeowners who will hook up to the Los Osos Wastewater Project. And we do have a link from our website to their page so you can get all the information. And we do suggest that people, even outside, but our water service area is completely within the prohibition zone, so they all are being retrofitted before they can link up to their the county project. So our crews continue to provide safe drinking water to the customers of Los Osos and of the Los Osos CSD, that is our service area. And we reported our February monthly report for the Water Resources Control Board with no violations. And this concludes my report for the evening. If you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Board? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Margaret.
Thanks.
Okay, item C, General Manager report. Ms. Kibley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President and members of the board. As you're well aware, the governor issued an executive order B-2915 that occurred on yesterday. Your board, because of all of the actions that you've taken, really are basically in compliance with that executive order and will reach the 25%. We'll reach the 25% savings that is necessary. Along with that, we have prepared letters this past month to our restaurant owners, along with table stands that say that water will only be served upon request, which is again part of the governor's order that he's issued. We will be delivering those to our various restaurant customers within the next month. I've been busy working on the ISJ, of course, extensively working to prepare the budget, and in working with U.S. Bank, our trustee, on our wastewater 2002 bonds with the analysis and the reconciliation of the repayment of the loan or of the use of the money to make the debt service payment. We've also worked on the water shortage contingency plan, and we're trying to complete the renovations, the design and engineering for the corporate facilities. Also this month, most of you must have seen this, there was an article that came out in the Tribune that was a very well done with regards to Los Osos water users who fight the we fight the threat from the sea. For those of you in the community, it came out on Sunday, March 15, 2015. And again, thank you to South Bay Fire for their help and assistance with the fire extinguisher training. With that, it concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, Board?
I have one, and I don't know if it can be answered, and this is for anybody, really. What are the repercussions if we don't meet the 25% reduction that the governor has called for? And maybe in the future, our water reports could give us an update. I mean, I see production data from 2 years ago, and I'm following it month by month, and it looked like through the summers we were cutting back 25%, and then we get to the winter, and there's not such a big difference between 12-13 and 14-15. So maybe...
That's correct.
Yeah, from now on, maybe we could get just a snapshot of up-to-date where we're at with that 25% number, and does anybody know what happens if we don't get there?
They're in the process right now of developing the rules and the regulations and the guidelines, and unfortunately, since it only occurred yesterday, it's going to be a little while before we get that information.
Pass the law, then figure out how to
work. Thank you.
It's just a declaration. Exactly, a declaration. I think it's a good idea, Margaret, if that could be included, just to give us a percentage on that. So, great. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, let's move on to District Legal Counsel report. Mr. Seitz.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and audience. At the February meeting, I was asked to basically prepare a statement of policy in regards to the reimbursement of prepaid assessments. As Julie reminded me, that was supposed to be on your on my report in March, and it wasn't, so here it is in April. And I have to, at the beginning of this, thank Julie Tacker. I'm sorry she's not here. She sent me an email after the agenda was posted and gave me a little bit more history, which changed the first paragraph in it. And so, Julie, if you're listening, thank you. Essentially what had occurred is when the district filed for bankruptcy, a number of people who had prepaid their assessments on the original Tri-W assessment filed claims in the bankruptcy seeking the return of that assessment money. There's a great defense to that because that money is essentially security for the bonds that were issued and that are obligated to be repaid. And consequently, when we became aware of those claims in 2007, the district sent a list of prepaid assessments to our bankruptcy counsel. He matched those to the people who were filing claims, objected to those claims, and all of our district's objections were sustained. However, it recently, perhaps in the last 6 months, we became aware that approximately 5 prepaid assessment claims were not objected to. And those claims were ultimately allowed by the bankruptcy court, and they were repaid at the rate of 41 cents on the dollar. What my investigation, I was asked to investigate that, and what I determined was that those 5 names were not on the list that was provided to our bankruptcy counsel. Looking back on it, I was not the attorney. My firm was not the attorney at the time, and none of these board members, except for perhaps Mr. Cesenio, were on at the time. So I'm just going to assume the good faith of people, and I don't think there's anything untoward in terms of those 5 names. I just don't know why they weren't a part of it, but they weren't. But as a result of that information, we've been receiving claims and small claims, basically requesting for the return of other prepaid assessments on the basis that we've established some sort of precedent. What the board policy is that we cannot do that because we are required to abide by the court order in the bankruptcy and the final plan. Second, that the overall responsibility for collection of money and payment of the assessments to the bondholders is now with the County of San Luis Obispo. The district has provided the names of those people and the parcels to the county for their action and disposition upon any claims that are being made. But it is the district's policy to deny any claim for reimbursement of prepaid assessments, and the district will continue to vigorously defend any such claims. And that's a statement of and an explanation of the district's policy.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, board? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Okay, let's move on to LOCAC.
Hello again, Jen Harper. At our last meeting, the general plan, local coastal plan amendment to adjust the urban reserve line to include the neighborhood subdivision of Monarch Grove was discussed. LOCAC recommends approval of the amendment. The amendment is necessary for the Monarch Grove residents to be able to hook up to the sewer. This is desirable because the temporary sewer system that has served only Monarch Grove for the last 15 years is close to the end of its useful life. It was intended to provide service only until the community-wide sewer was built. The homeowners in Monarch Grove are strongly in favor of this change. This amendment will not cost Prohibition Zone homeowners anything. It will lower our sewer costs by a fractional amount. The community plan update kickoff meeting was Saturday. It had a rocky start because the building was not open. The meeting started 15 minutes late. Attendees helped set up chairs and tables in the usual Los Osos pitch in and help mode. After an introduction by Jim Bergman, Director of Planning, Carrie Brown, our Los Osos planner, gave an overview of the plan update and the process we are using to gather public comment. All of these meetings will be held at the South Bay Community Center and will start at 6 p.m. The public comment meetings, the dates of those meetings are April 13th, which is the EIR scoping meeting, April 20th, they'll be discussing Chapter 2, May 18th, Chapters 3 and 4, June 8th, Chapters 5 and 6. The plan can be downloaded from the Planning Department website. The LOCAC Traffic and Circulation meets Tuesday, April 14th at 5:30 p.m. at the South Bay Community Center small meeting room. The next LOCAC meeting is Thursday, April 23rd, 7 p.m., South Bay Community Center. More information can be found on the LOCAC website, locac.info. LOCAC also has openings. We have several applicants for the three openings that we have. So if you're interested, again, you can get information at our website. Okay. Thank you, Board.
Any questions? Just a question, when you're talking about the chapters, or what's the title of those chapters?
I don't have them off the top of my head.
Okay.
But it's I'm sure the first couple are on design, and I know the circulation element, I believe, is Chapter 5, so that's June 8th. Okay. But those are the, and I'm sure that's going to be on our website.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll have the Los Osos Baywood Park Chamber of Commerce report.
Good evening. I'm Steve Vinson with the Chamber, and I've just got a few events to tell you about. The Chamber is holding its Business Expo on Friday, May 15, at the South Bay Community Center from 5:30 to 7:30. This year's theme is celebrating 60 years of business. It's the Chamber's 60th birthday. There'll be 35 businesses at the Expo. There'll be a cash bar and food for sale. The event is free, and I urge you to come out and support your local businesses. For more information, you can go to our website or just give us a call at the Chamber. Next, the Chamber is sponsoring a sexual harassment training on Tuesday, May 5th, from 9 to noon, right here at Sea Pines. This training will help employers and employees become more knowledgeable about sexual harassment in the workplace. It can also help lower employers' insurance rates. Each attendee will receive a certificate of completion. See our website for more details. Celebrate Los Osos is hosting a fundraiser called Concert in the Garden, and that's going to be on Sunday, May 17. Singer-songwriter Inga Swearinger is, sorry, thank you, will perform. And you can go to their website for more details. And the chamber, our April mixer, is going to be on Wednesday, April 8th from 5:30 to 7 at La Palapa Mexican Restaurant. As always, the event's open to public. All these mixers are, some people think that you have to be a member of the chamber. Anybody can come to a mixer, and, you know, our door is open. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? No? Okay. Now let's move on to G, Director's Announcements of District and Community Interest and Reports, or attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars. Any of those? No?
Yeah, I can spot. Okay, I attended the RAC meeting yesterday. It happened to be the meeting that occurred on the day when the governor sort of came out with the pistols blazing. So as the meeting went on over its agenda, it got more and more frantic and excited. So we started out talking about and describing how the rain levels are 32% to 53% of normal, which is sort of the way it was last time I went to the meeting. The Paso Robles Water District reorganization is moving forward, allegedly. They talked about things that are happening. The Proposition 84 IRWM grant funding round is moving forward. And we should maybe peruse and see if we have an opportunity there. I think the monies may be limited. There was a presentation about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. They identified Los Osos as one of the three high-priority basins in the county, which means we're in trouble. Then there was a lengthy presentation about the Flood Control and Water Conservation District budget and priorities. Not sure how that all impacts us. And the County Public Works Department is under reorganization. Then we got to the Drought Task Force report, which generated a whole bunch of questions. And the sort of participation of those in attendance kind of split. Anybody that was over 45 or had gray hair was really excited. Let's do something. Everybody else thought it was cool. We don't care. You know, we'll manage this. So, and the former group was saying, look, we got to figure out how to move faster and get beyond these bureaucratic obstacles that may prevent us from acting the way we should. So it ended up in a draw, and the meeting came to adjourn.
Thank you. Any other reports? Any on the ad hoc? Director Storm?
Excuse me. I need to announce that the Financial Advisory Committee meeting will be moved from the 4th of May at 5:30 to the 5th of May at 5:30. I'm teaching a 9-week class that gets out at 6:20, and we thought with staff time, it would be better to do it at 5:30 on Tuesday the next day instead of on that Monday. I apologize for that. I can guarantee that I'll never be taking the 9-week class schedule again. It's too much in one day. The second announcement is just to remind people that we're looking for an alternate on the FAC. Thank you.
Also, I think, too, Ann, you were going to send out emails to the FAC committee members ahead of time. Very good. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other ad hoc reports? Chuck, nothing on the Section 7?
No, I'm still waiting for the information that I requested nearly a month ago regarding the district's priorities that were furnished to the county, the list of activities that we wanted covered under the HCP. So I know at least what our starting point is.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks. Okay. Before we move on to the public comment on items, I just want to do an ex parte in regards to 11E. I did meet with Mr. Edwards yesterday. I wanted to get some background on the process. I just wanted to put that on the record. And anybody else have any ex parte communications in that department?
I guess I should announce I did the same about a week ago.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Seeing that? No? Okay, very good. Okay, so before we move on to public comment on items on the administrative and committee reports and consent items, any items that the board wants to pull for separate consideration?
That
11E, I don't think, should be on the consent calendar.
Okay, 11E. That's the consideration of conditional intent to serve letter for 1325 Pasadena Drive. Okay, so let's move that to item 13. Okay. Any comment on that? No? Okay, let's then open it up to public comment on items on the administrative and committee reports. Except 11E.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, Board, again. My name is Jeff Edwards. There were just a handful of things I wanted to go through, and I'll do that fairly quickly. First of all, you'll notice that the Palisades well, there was no production this month, or February, I should say. And that is something I believe the Palisades well can be shut down permanently. If you talk to your district engineer, Rob Miller, apparently the potential need to retain Palisades relates to providing the school's water this summer. Next summer they should have recycled water, so really it's just this summer. And I think your district engineer has some creative ideas on how to do that, to provide the water to the schools so Palisades can be shut down. Second item, I would like to respectfully disagree with your general manager that the Tribune article of March 15th was good journalism. They had a gentleman write this article that had virtually no background information about Los Osos. And the idea that we have 5 years of water left and we're all going to have to move out of town is an absurdity. This was junk reporting, and to characterize this as good is just, I'm shocked. The next item I'd like to raise has to do with your warrants. And there, you have a check in the warrants to Barnett and Cox for $2,400. This is not the first check. This is one of many. They're being paid a lot of money to do nothing. They are involved in a water conservation marketing campaign. And I would respectfully submit to your board that their efforts are not saving water the way real retrofit programs are, including the existing Title 19 program. So please do not hire them for any further marketing campaigns. It's a waste of money, in my opinion. Lastly, I would, as a member of the Finance Advisory Committee, in anticipation of the May 5th meeting, I would ask that the cost-benefit analysis for the new building at 2030 10th Street be part of that agenda. Again, it's virtually a month away, and I would ask for the benefit of the members on the FAC that we have the cost-benefit analysis to help make recommendations about pursuing that building or not. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. Woo. I had three things I wanted to address. The first one, since Phil is still here and since Margaret is here, I'm wondering if we could find out the status of our fire hydrants and the colors of the caps. Somebody asked me about that the other day, and I have no clue as to what the colors are painted on the caps, what it means in terms of water pressure and fire suppression, since that is the big topic. The other thing I was going to say was on number 11E. I would recommend that you continue this item. And on 9D, I know the county now has the collection on those bond payments. And before, when some people did go to court, which is small claims court, trying to get their money back on that, it was thrown out by the judge in 2 hot minutes. So it's really a non-starter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Next speaker.
Lindy Owen, this will be the third month that we've requested the Barnett and Cox information to find out how far that contract's gone and could we see what results we got out of it. How many posters, how many bumper stickers. Again, it's been asked by a board member, I believe, that be brought to the public, and so I will ask it one more time. And then on item the brine waste hauling item 11F. I wanted to ask a few questions. It's not terribly clear. To haul the brine away from the nitrate removal facility that they're doing, that we're doing, I would like to ask, it says that its transportation costs per load are $360, but then the cost per hour is $95. Then when you go down here and say the lowest responsible bidder was Speed's Oil Tool Service out of Santa Maria, they provided a price of $360 per load, which is 5,000 gallons of waste from the denitrification, and then $30,000 per year for this upcoming year and $80,000 in the following year. So what is the $95 per hour? Who pays that, and what is this? I don't understand what this time is. It's $1.60 per minute for the semi-vac truck at the load site and the unload site. So I'd like that to be clarified. And this is a very awkward place to hold a meeting, I'll tell you. I also wanted to have clarification. I understood we were replacing one utility vehicle. I see that we're replacing two. I also find it interesting that we went all the way to Fresno. Of course, Ms. Kivley worked nearby, so she probably had a connection. But I'd like to know why we're replacing two vehicles. We just did major repairs to one vehicle to give it a extra life line. And I think that's about it. I definitely am not happy to see that we did not have any discussion, and I do hope that you'll bring in cost analysis. And I have one question. Maybe Mr. Wright could answer that. Have we canceled the rental agreement with the location where our CSD is at right now?
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Any response? Richard.
Didn't see him there. Richard Margetson. On the financials, I find it interesting that there were a number of changes this month, and the staff cover page is one half of the front page. No explanation of anything. So I'm going to just point out two things, since we don't have a finance meeting every month. At least a half a dozen times I've asked why monthly billing for personnel in Bay Ridge Vista and drainage was running zero. Well, I asked that question at your last meeting. So as of 1/31, everything was zero, all those columns. In today's financials for this meeting, as an example, Bay Ridge is now, the mid-year budget adjustment was to $8,400. The year-to-date actual now is $9,592. That's why I asked the question, gentlemen. We're now over budget in Bay Ridge for personnel. That's why you do not wait to the end of the year, and you do not listen to your general manager saying that was a standard accounting practice to do it that way, and that's why they were doing it, because they had this program that was going to tell them at the end of the year what all of those categories were going to be for personnel. Second comment, fire department, line item 6110, was running $100 a month for IT services purchased. $100 a month through January was $700. It's now jumped up to $1,570. What's the $770 increase in IT purchased services in 1 month, and is that going to continue for the rest of the year? And then my last comment is with respect to the back and forth after public comment. I guess the next question, Chuck, should have been, so Mr. Wright, you by yourself, approached the general manager and told her to look for another facility and to come up with that list of grievances to send to the community center. You by yourself. No input coming back to you from staff or the general manager. You determined that by yourself and directed her to come up with that list. That's the question that needs to be answered, Chuck.
Thank you. Public comment?
Hi, thank you. My name is Al Darrell. First of all, I'd like to read you something from Stanford group that I was given by Director Liu and Tornowski. And in conclusion, it states that these people are National Science Foundation experts. These are the top national, thank you, National Academy of Science. So this is what they say. In conclusion, our report, our results suggest that the anthropogenic warming has increased the probability of the co-occurring temperatures and precipitation conditions that have historically led to drought in California. In addition, continued global warming is likely to cause a transition to a regime in which essentially every seasonal, annual, and multi-annual precipitation deficit co-occur with historically warm conditions. The current warm dry event in California, as well as the historic observation of previous seasons, annuals, and multi-annual warm dry events, suggest that such a regime would substantially increase the risk of severe impact on humans and nature system. I do this in relation to the fire chief's report, because in addition to those two conditions, we also have the wind condition. So we have three conditions that are exacerbating the drying of basically our environmental plants. And the trees here are dependent on the leach fields for the root system to get water to support them. When that goes down, when the sewer is hooked up, you're going to find more and more very dangerous fire conditions around the homes where these trees are. Now, I happen to have a pine with a whole lot of sap in it right behind my house, and it's right in a corner where there's a duplex and two triplexes next to it. So it's kind of concerned. So I'd like to give you that. As far as water report goes, I think you have to realize that, you know, Jeff Edwards gets up and he says, well, whoever says that there's a five-year supply, blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't know how sustainable this basin is. We know there's water underneath. We've had three wells that the CSD has tried to gain water with, and they failed. The South Bay well was a huge disappointment in production. And that was supposed to replace the central well, which was 500 gallons a minute producing. It's only producing 100 gallons a minute or some small amount of money. So what we're doing here is we are presuming that we can develop 1,700 lots and give more people more water. That's not right.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Keith Weimer, thank you. I'll follow up on what Al just said. One of the studies indicated that this is the worst drought in 1,200 years, so since medieval times, and this was after 3 years of the drought, so it was last year. And that study was on rings in blue oak trees. And it's not that maybe this is the lowest precipitation since in that time, but it's the combination of real low soil moisture and the low precipitation. So it, in terms of how it affects, you know, vegetation, it is extremely serious. I wanted to point out that, yes, we are a little bit ahead of the curve, because what you're, I hope, going to implement tonight, the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, will put us right on target for that 25% reduction, which is mandated by February of next year. And it could go a little further. But what I wanted to emphasize, and this is also something Al said, is that we don't know what it's going to take to save this basin. We've never stopped seawater intrusion. It keeps coming. And it's getting to a point where it's very close to the large pumping depressions that are under the commercial area. So what is it going to take in terms of this drought? When we have a basin plan that, you know, that is pie in the sky, you know, talking about 17 inches of rain from some, you know, nice time in the past, we aren't dealing with reality here. So I hope you keep that in mind as we get to the next issue, and I'll bring it up again. Mr. Tarnowski, please keep looking for those opportunities for grants. I disagree in that the state is throwing around a lot of money right now, you know, helping people develop. Here's one example. Apparently, the landscape ordinance, the water efficient landscape ordinance, is going to be extended not to just new building, but also to existing building. And you're going to be expected to put ordinances in place, and the districts that put ordinance in places will have priority for grants. So let's jump on that. Let's go out and get some of those grants. What's that? Oh, I did. Okay, and then the last thing is I do. They also, since this is Mr. Tarnowski's specialty, innovative technologies are also emphasizing that. So let's go after those grants.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker. Okay, seeing none. Any further questions from the board on this? Any responses from staff? Bill, you want to talk about the hydrant colors? Oh, you did? Okay, if you would, just for the public.
Stay here. Fire hydrants have been colored for many, many years, probably going back generations now in the fire service. The red cap on top of them means that you can get up to 500 gallons per minute. From the yellow cap means from 501 to 999. The green cap is from 1,000 to 1,499, and the blue caps are from 1,500 up. So I can drive down the road and go, okay, there's a red cap, there's a green cap, I want that one.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Yes, Rob.
Just to respond briefly to the brine hauling item, the $95 an hour refers to if we needed to haul somewhere else to a different location, then they would have that hourly rate. But the $350 or $360 is per load, and we're not going to be subject to the $95 an hour. So I hope
how many,
that.
How many loads?
Right now we're looking at about one load a week, and we'll probably be there for quite some time.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Okay, with that, entertain a motion to accept.
Move to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the items on the consent agenda with the exception of item 11.
Thank you. Second, please.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Okay, let's have a vote, please. Anne?
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Tarnowski?
Yes.
Director Sasania?
No.
Director Storm?
Yes.
President Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to number 12, general action item. This is the amendment to the water shortage contingency plan and declaration of stage 3 emergency. And Madam Kibley, is this to you or to Rob?
Mr. President, members of the board, Rob Miller will be presenting this information.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the board, are we on here? Oh, great, thank you. Fortunately, we did have a chance to bring this before the board during our last meeting to get some concrete feedback. Hopefully that will make this issue a little bit easier to address. Before you have a resolution which proposes two important changes to our water shortage contingency plan and recommends that we declare a stage 3 water shortage emergency. Initially, when we worked on this plan, there was a part of me, perhaps a more technical part, that thought, is a climate-based trigger the best idea here? You know, should we just be looking at water quality? And I had gone around the fact that we did it and recommended a 25% reduction at this stage, that the governor matched up, is dumb luck. But
on his part.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. We knew what we were doing. But we did recommend two changes as part of our discussion in our last meeting, and one is that the allocation per residential property, instead of automatically granting an occupancy of three persons, which would give everybody a starting point of 150 gallons per day, we're now having every residence specify the number of people in the residence so that everyone starts with one allocation, and until they provide the affidavit that indicates that there's more. Stage three is proposing a use per occupant of 50 gallons per occupant per day. And for those in the community who may be worried about that, I can assure you it's very achievable. Those of us who have been monitoring our own water use know that you can get below 40 without draconian measures if you're fully retrofitted in the property. So 50 gallons per capita per day, with each household being granted an allocation based on the number of occupants in the household. And that's in the resolution. The other thing in the resolution that came out of our last meeting is that we'd allow customers to have some flexibility in the use of that water. And if folks want to take more drastic measures indoor to have some minimal irrigation outdoors, then that would be allowable. But they still have to stay below their allocation. How quickly would this come into effect? While it would be in effect, stage three would be in effect tonight if you adopt it, the resolution, there would be some time to allow customers to go through a billing cycle to be able to understand their use. And so every customer would get at least one full billing cycle. And, of course, staff is going to take some time to get used to the affidavit, to get used to the process, to work with our software company to make sure this is implemented, so it's going to take some time. But we certainly think this is an action that's warranted this evening. In terms of financial impact, we have no way of predicting with certainty how many people will be in the penalty once this is implemented, and there is a possibility we may collect significant dollars from people being in that penalty. For that reason, we're not coming to you tonight to recommend that you implement the already approved and adopted emergency water shortage rates until we see what the real revenues are. But we may be coming back to you after two billing cycles to do that, but we're not proposing to do that tonight. There was a little bit of public discussion as to whether some of the numbers that are represented here are going to ultimately represent a new normal in the community, and I think that's a good question, and I don't have a great answer to that, only that once you're fully retrofitted, it's amazing when the habits change that some of the characteristics of your water use are permanently fixed. So hopefully we are looking at some new normals here. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board?
One of the rationales, and you can remind me that there were others, that we put for the delays in going to the stages that match up the actual measurements was this financial measure sounding that you need to take, right? So we want to go a billing cycle, then talk about the billing rates. But is that still the same now that we've done the rate study?
Yeah, it is. The rate study has the benefit of actually locking in the maximum emergency rates at each stage. So those rates are available to us today, but I think in the case of Cambria, it was only after people began reacting to the penalties. It took quite some time before everyone got their use down with an allocation. So we may see some increased revenue and penalties right up front, and then people learn, and then we may be back to you if we're going to be here for a long period of time.
So I guess put another way, I'm wondering if the rationale for those time period delays are the same. Should we speed them up? Should we leave them the same? Or should we slow them down?
When you say the time periods, you mean we can't declare a stage four or five before
right.
April of next year. I think with respect to stages four and five, the big concern that I remember back from September or October of last year was the irrigation of community facilities was one of the things that was on the prohibition list for stage four. And the thought was at the time, we have recycled water coming, go another year, although there's part of me who would love to pursue upper aquifer supplies for the schools now, for this summer. Certainly been thinking about that, but that was the rationale behind that trigger for stage four, is primarily for the schools, and also to give people an opportunity to acclimate to stage three and what 50 gallons per capita actually feels like in terms of your lifestyle.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or public comment? Okay. Higher up, Lou.
I think there are things we can do that we are doing now to sort of get to this benchmark. Our house is long. Our tank is up here. The shower's back there. So I know we're losing all sorts of gallons out the door. And there are other things. And it seems to me there's a potential for a project, actually, that's run and aggressive to inform people about costs and implementation patterns. So I don't know. I'd be for trying to do something like that and not just say, here it is.
Yeah, I agree. I think letting people know that once you retrofit, it's so much easier to comply with these requirements without any change in your lifestyle. The front load and washing machine alone makes a huge difference, we've found.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the board? Okay, seeing that, we'll open to public comment.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrell, and I'm a water conservation guy. I'm also a gardener, and most of my water does not go down the drain, so the sewer is not going to get a lot of water from my unit, I can guarantee you. I put a stainless steel bowl that's big enough for maybe a gallon of water in the sink, and that's where the water goes. Well, I wash and I reuse that. And then I use fresh water to rinse, and that water goes back in that bowl. And then that water goes out the door into a lemon tree. So in my garden, I recycle everything. When I take a bath or a shower, that water goes out the window into the bed that's right below the window. So I try not to waste any water. But I had an expert come in today from PG&E to check my meter because I'm paying for a lot of energy I didn't use, and he pointed out to me that people don't know what's going on. People are not informed. They're not thinking about that. They're thinking about getting to work, feeding their kids, doing all those kinds of things, paying their rent. I don't know how you can inform the public that they're facing these extra expenses, fines, and other kinds of things if you without first doing this before you improve this water conservation plan. And I also would say that there's plenty of money out there for CSDs now. Governor Brown announced that yesterday, that he had money for CSDs for conservation. And I totally agree with everybody that if you retrofit, it's a lot easier to do it. So when I have my toilet, I have a dual flush toilet, which I put in at my own expense, and I don't mind that. But I have to say that conservation is going to take some real creativity and some learning. And I think you need some workshops out here for people.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker.
Keith Weimer, homeowner. First, congratulations, because we are on target. So we anticipated that. And I congratulate the CSD for... for getting out ahead of it. It looks pretty good overall, so I appreciate that it's, everybody is going to be participating in this. I mean, the way it was set up before, we wouldn't have really had a savings from that. It wouldn't have produced the 25%. This will, and it could produce more. A few things that seem to be missing. One is that the commercial. Cambria, there's a CSD director here tonight, and Chuck and I met with her not too many days ago, and just wanted to hear a little bit more about their program and why reinvent the wheel. Let's get all the information we can from them so that the implementation goes very smoothly. But one of the things that they did was to realize and to implement a 20% reduction with commercial
And as I understand it, it just had to be tied to billing periods. It couldn't be an overall 20% reduction, but to work it had to go month, you know, or billing period by billing period. The affidavits, let's make sure we know what the affidavits are. Let's make sure we know, you know, what they look like, the affidavits look like, but also what the exemption forms are. There will be people with special needs and situations that where you need to be, you know, have a waiver here and there. The emergency rates, I think I'm, you know, going to disagree with Rob, but I'm really happy about this thing going forward, so I hate to do it. But the emergency rates, if they get implemented right away, as I remember it, there was $150,000 for conservation. I think Al touched on it just a little bit, that, you know, let's use that to help people make the transition so their lives will, you know, they'll find out their lives are better. I mean, what happens is that you don't need as much water as most people are using. And if you got, you know, a little bit of, hopefully there's be a little bit of rain to capture, and you got gray water, between the two of those things, you can have a pretty complete garden, and it can thrive. I mean, and it's really not that costly, but people do need a boost. They do need, you know, some help with that. And, you know, if you have people that are really having a hard time with it, you know, to counsel them, whatever you want to call it, you know, to give them a special education with that money would be very effective, because you wouldn't be at odds with people. You'd be, you know, helping them to adjust to it. So, yeah, and we can also think about incentives for people going a little bit lower than 50 gallons per person per day. You know, something on the bill or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Lindy Owen. I wanted to have a number of questions, but I wanted to ask on item 11E, you were talking about a motion to possibly declare a stage 5 water shortage. So does that not conflict with declaring a stage 3 level tonight? So, and then I wanted to say that in the page on this item discussion, it says the number 2, to remove the landscape prohibition from stages 3 and 4 to provide residential customers flexibility. The wording is really sloppy, but it's also missing when you go to do your resolution. Number 3 down here in the lower part says the water shortage contingency plan is hereby modified to remove the prohibition on the use of potable water to irrigate landscaping from stages 3 and 4. Though while you talk about it above, you talk about customers expected to remain below their allocation for total water use. It's just, I think you could improve the verbiage there, and it's missing. When the sewer goes online, I just wonder if anybody's working with the county to find out how much water we're going to be short in making the sewer work. I think we're going to be reprocessing all the recycled water just to keep it running. Once houses reduce. The middle school lawn has gone brown. I wonder how that's going to impact the district revenue. I'd like to know how you intend on finding out how many people are in each home. You said that you would put one 50-gallon restriction per home, and then people would have to come in. I mean, that's too bad we couldn't have utility meetings, because those are the kinds of things you iron out. Are you sending notices out? Are you going to, I'm not sure. There appears to be over $2 million left in the county's wastewater project that has not been used for conservation, and it was its whole intention was to be used to conserve water and help save our basin. And the county has wasted 8 years twiddling their thumbs, not getting it all put to use. So that is something that we should work with the county to get hold of some of that money to help make this system work and help people with training. We used to have Jason, who did home visits to help people retrofit their homes and see where they were losing water. You know, we hired the guy to do that, and now he does other things in the office to help Ms. Kivley, because she needs extra help. And I encourage that we get Ron Munz as our new manager. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, Amanda Rice. I'm director on the Cambria CSD. I'm not here representing the Cambria CSD, but I am representing the knowledge that it exists from that community to this community If you have questions in particular, I'm glad to hear that you're doing the affidavit system. If you want any information about how that was implemented in Cambria, we did start with one per household, and then people had to bring in the affidavit to show that they had more than one person if that was the case. One of the things that kind of concerns me, as you say, you're not going to implement any of the increased rates or penalties in the first billing cycle, except that while it is true during the first billing cycle, people don't reduce until they have a bill that actually has an increased amount of money. That's what actually triggers the savings in the next billing cycle for everybody, is they get the bill that says, oh my gosh, I went over, I've got this huge surcharge, I've got to do something about it. So I think if you delay that implementation, you may end up in a situation where you're going to not realize those savings right away. And my understanding of this basin is it's already having trouble providing water for the number of people that are already here and the number of gallons that are being pumped. And so the conservation is especially important here. I would urge you to reconsider you don't need to do an outright ban on outdoor irrigation, but the state and the governor have said you need to limit it to no more than 2 days a week, and that's whether or not you're an urban water supplier or not. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do that, implementation also includes enforcement, and most people are going to follow the rules, and you're going to get compliance. We actually usually use about 700 acre feet a year in Cambria. This past year we used 440. So the main message that Los Osos should get is that 50 gallons per person per day is not that hard. And Mr. Miller already said it. It is really not that hard, especially if you're already efficient. It is really not that hard to get down to 30 if you already have efficient appliances and you're being extra careful, because that's what a lot of folks in Cambria are already doing. I'm available if you have any questions at all, but I'm very glad to see that you guys are approaching this. You could be doing stronger, but at least we're going somewhere. That's a good thing.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson. I still believe we're at stage 5 right now, and I don't know. I don't know why we're not doing that. The staff report talks about billing cycles, waiting billing cycles. It actually says in here under financial impact, staff plans to review water demand and revenues for 2 consecutive billing cycles, 4 months. 4 months, we're going to be in the middle of summer. If you look at the staff report for the utilities department, our greatest demand is in the summer months. And if you look at the water consumption table in the utilities report and you extrapolate forward, we're going to be at about 185 million gallons, down from 211 last year. That's 575 between 570 and 580 acre feet of water consumption. Revenue extrapolated forward off of your staff report from the utilities department is barely going to meet last year's total. So there's going to be a financial impact. That's if we maintain the status quo on consumption for the next 3 months. Even after this is announced, I think you're waiting way too long to realize what the financial impacts are going to be to the district. I think 4 months and then implementing and then getting it in the cycle, that'll be into next fiscal year. You're going to have some revenue problems at the end of this fiscal year leading into your next budget. This should have been at the Utilities Committee, and I'll say it again, it should have been at the Finance Committee to look at. Look at those tables from your utilities department.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Bring it back. Any answers there, folks? Rob?
I thought it was a good discussion, and certainly appreciate Cambria blazing the ground locally for us. And certain that we'll be reaching out, and we already have some of the forms and background, but as this is our first time doing this type of system, it may not go perfectly. It will go. And we have other stages to look at in the future, and we're going to jump into this thing and try to inform the public. With respect to the financial status, there's no reason we can't, at any given board meeting, bring back revenue implications, and at any time, if that becomes a concern the next meeting, we could always bring that rate increase forward. Probably be wise to view this monthly.
I'm trying to make this more efficient, but if I understand correctly, what's in the staff report is that this is not going to take effect until the first billing cycle, because we have no way at all to find out what water consumption is today, and then if their bill's coming out in 2 weeks.
Right, that's
so
right.
That's the reason for the first billing cycle,
right,
because
right.
We have no way to do it any other fashion.
Right, for the penalty, for the penalties to take effect. That's right. And I would say, of course, it's in the board's discretion to look at the latter stages more quickly than you had discussed last fall. But this is what we staff believe the board's direction was, and we think it's a good first step.
Okay, thanks. Let's bring it back to the board for discussion. Yes, Mr. Opilski.
First of all, I'd like to clarify one thing that Amanda brought up. We have already adopted the outdoor watering restrictions, so we already those have been in effect for July of last year. So, or not last? Is that?
Yeah, it's been a year.
It's been that long. Okay. Well, anyways, we've had those in effect, so we have the 2-day and half the water at night. So those are already in effect. What I'd really like to talk about, though, is just, and I don't want to really be patting ourselves on the back, but I think us being proactive and being out in front of the curve here has been really, really important. So we're not going to be in a panic mode like some other people are who have been really hiding, you know, their heads under the ground. So I think that's, and I want to express my appreciation to staff and to Rob and to Utilities Department and to the people on the Utility Advisory Committee that we have been very, very, I think very, very educated and upfront on this and forthcoming on it. You know, and the thing that's been important, and I know that Amanda will relate to this, I mean, we, even though the governor comes down with this order yesterday, I mean, we don't tie to any other sources of water. We have an independent source of water that's our basin. So what people do in Bakersfield, I mean, God bless them, but that doesn't impact our consumption here and our availability of water. So I think it's been very, very important, and we've been dealing with this on a basin, on our basin, because it's not a unique situation, but we're just not tied. We don't have state water. We don't have other water supplies. So I think that's been important. I have a couple questions, though, before that I'd like to add here. And this is a question of clarification, and it has to do with the water allocation. So, for example, if I have two occupants in my house and I'm entitled, well, not entitled, but I have an allocation of 100 gallons per day, what happens if I only use 50? That allocation stays with my property. It's not transferable. Is that correct?
That's very important and correct. Yes. We don't want a transfer of allocations from property to property.
Okay. Because I just want to make that crystal clear,
yes,
because I could see where in a situation that may occur. So let me follow up that with a question. I think this is really to Michael. Do we need to add language to this, or is just that as an intent enough?
No, I think we should add language.
That it's non-transferable?
Right.
Okay. Because I'm just speaking now, but I'd like to see that language added, because I really think that's critical. Because that, in my mind and the way I'm thinking about it, that gives us an additional saving, because the people who don't use their 50, we're going to make sure that's saved and it's not being transferred to other properties.
Good.
So I think, you know, that's the one thing I wanted to bring out. I appreciate what you said, Rob, and what I would suggest that we might want to look at. You know, we go to level 3 now, and what I'd like to see us do is after we do our next round of monitoring, which will be in October, of our wells, I think that would be the next appropriate time to bring these back to look at, because we'll have new data on the salt contents in the water, et cetera. So I'd like to see, instead of waiting till next April, that we bring this back after our next round of testing. And, well, the testing's in October, correct?
You'll have testing in April and October.
Okay.
Twice a year.
So our next round of testing will be in October. So I'd like to see this come back
November.
In November rather than waiting till the October testing. But that's just my opinion. So I'll just throw those out. I probably want to speak again, but I'd like to just
sure.
throw
okay.
those out.
Yes, Chuck.
Why don't we look at the April testing and why wait till October? I mean, and I think that penalties, the emergency rates need to be implemented as soon as possible. One billing cycle, get people used to it. But I agree with the supposition that until you get hit in the pocketbook, you're not incentivized to save. And one of the things that I think we need to do is if we had $150,000 for conservation in our emergency rate study, let's use that for the people that seem to be having trouble, struggling. We counsel them. We do leak detection. We try and help. We want to help people get to the goal. I mean, that's the point, is to save the basin, and we won't save it if we don't work with people. So I those are just two thoughts.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions?
Mr. President?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, the reason that we chose two billing cycles is because of the fact that our customers are billed over those two cycles. In other words, half the customers are billed on one cycle, the second half are billed on the others, and it is a 60-day cycle. So that's why we chose the two billing cycles.
Okay, thanks.
So we get all the customers.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so... No other questions. Let's talk about the motion and on this. Any adjustments?
If I could just suggest some additional language pursuant to what Marshall had to say. If you take a look at number two on the resolution that refers to the water shortage contingency plan as modified to establish an allocation per occupant. I labeled that section A and put a section B, and the language I have at the bottom are that allocations are not transferable from the residential or multifamily uses.
Excuse me. I would say any use, not just restricted to the residential. I mean...
Okay, well, I was trying to keep in accordance. This resolution only deals with those two.
Oh, that's true. And I guess that was a question Amanda brought up. And I mean, our customers are primarily residential. The commercial is primarily in Golden State. So but that is a good question.
The Second Street area.
Well, but all of Los Sosos Valley Road, all of those centers are in Golden State. So that's a good, but that's a good point. I don't know, Rob.
I think staff may be coming back to the board at some point to talk about commercial. I think we'll do residential, get it in place, and commercial may become a topic of a future meeting also.
Okay, well, on the fact that section 2 does talk about residential, the language that you're saying I think addresses my concern about transferability. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion then, if that's okay.
Sure.
I'll go ahead and move that we accept this document with the addition that Mr. Seitz suggested.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, let's take a vote, please.
Vice President Nogilski?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Cesania?
Yes.
Director Tarnotsky?
Yes.
President Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to move on to items pulled from the consent. That'll be 11E. And get a presentation on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, long night tonight.
Okay, so this will be Mr. Miller again. We need a name sign for
it. Yeah, well, I used to have one. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is... an intent to serve letter for 1325 Pasadena Drive. And this is something that's been discussed briefly at previous meetings, but I'll just go through some of the staff work that has been done on it. An intent to serve letter has been developed and is attached to your package that includes both general and special conditions that require the applicant, if you approve this letter, to do a number of things. One is that they have to provide a proof that the Regional Water Board has verified that the project that they're proposing is consistent with the basin plan. and which means basically that the regional board has determined that another similar use has been abandoned in the basin, that they also have to provide verification that the county has issued a coastal development permit. We had previously said verification from the Coastal Commission, but because a coastal development permit may stop at the county level, we clarify that language for this version. The intent to serve currently reads that they also have to provide confirmation that the project has completed the required water fixture retrofits pursuant to Title 19 of the county code, which requires retrofitting of properties outside the prohibition zone, and a number of other special conditions, all of which have to be met in order for the applicant to be eligible for a will serve. This is just an intent to serve letter that's being discussed tonight. We gave the board two options to consider this evening. One is to adopt the intent to serve as conditioned or with modified conditions, and the other is to, if the board felt that for reasons you were unable to make a finding, that you could adopt the intent to serve letter, to look at a higher stage of your water shortage contingency plan, which stages 4 and 5 currently in that plan prohibit the issuance of additional intent to serve letters. So there's two options listed in the staff note. I know the applicant's agent is here, and we'll be happy to answer any questions, and council may have other thoughts here.
Right. Mr. Olhilski has a question for
I have a question for the applicant's representative, because could Jeff, before you talk, because I may declare a conflict of interest here. I want to make sure this project that you're doing here does not involve any of the water transferred from Pine and Los Osos Valley Road.
That's not correct.
Then I'm going to recuse myself.
Fair enough.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move on this. Any questions before we open up public comment? Hang on. Okay, we got a clarification here.
Mr. Edwards, isn't it just wastewater transfer from there?
Yeah. Or
wastewater.
That's what I said, wastewater transfer.
Fundamentally, yes. However, in this instance, there's also a requirement for a water retrofit certificate. The applicant has obtained the retrofit certificate, so the question of water is moot, really.
But what you're saying, Counselor, is that with respect to the Pine Street property, that's only for wastewater. Only for wastewater purposes.
Except right. Two. There are two that have water and wastewater there. So.
I'm confused.
Right. There's a wastewater that you got from the regional board.
Perhaps I can answer these questions in the context of my presentation.
But he has to recuse himself. That's why I need to
understand. It is a transfer from Pine, so your recusal is probably an accurate thing.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's open this up to public comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'm appearing here tonight for the applicant. I gave some background at the March meeting, but perhaps if the president allows, I'll take a little bit more time and go a little bit longer and explain. But the regional board. Let me back up. The regional board approved 12 single-family residential transfers originating at 2150 Pine. On Los Osos Valley Road in Pine. This is the first of the 12 transfers or demolitions that are being transferred into the LOCSD district. As I explained last time, if these were going from Golden State to Golden State, I wouldn't be here before you tonight. That would be automatic. And in fact, some of the transfers are going to Golden State, some are going to Sunset Terrace here. But a handful will be coming to your district, and that's why I'm here tonight asking for your approval. To be clear, this is not a new connection. I would not be here before you if this did not involve the demolition of an existing dwelling unit, and specifically in accordance with the Water Board approval. Okay? So this is not a new connection, as is contemplated, for example, by your stage 4-5. So your district engineer has outlined the staff report. As he mentioned, there are a number of regular and special conditions, and the applicant agrees to those. With the approval of this ITS tonight, this is just the beginning of the process. With this ITS, the applicant will make a formal application with the County Planning and Building Department and start at the actual land use permit process, which has quite a number of steps, as you may know. So, the reason I'm here is that this application crosses district boundaries, but be assured there will be no increase in water consumption. And in fact, if somebody is interested in tearing down a structure that's old and perhaps not very conservation oriented, this is something that should be encouraged community-wide. We know now that even with the wastewater project, there will be no new development for the foreseeable future. I have to correct an assertion that was made a couple times earlier in the meeting about vacant lots. There are 700 vacant lots in this community now, not 1,700. And again, none of those vacant lots will have the right to access water for new development for a long time. There are a number of steps that need to be to satisfy. They're all in connection with the Coastal Commission special condition number 6 for the wastewater project. So unless you can demolish a structure, an existing structure, you cannot build. So again, I'm here to ask for your approval, and I'm here to answer any questions you may have. I'll just conclude my comments by stating a couple of facts about retrofit programs in Los Osos. Currently, there are a couple programs. First of all, Title VIII is a real property. It's a retrofit upon sale ordinance. So anytime you sell a home in this community, you have to retrofit. Secondly, there is a Title 19 retrofit program. This is retrofit to build. The applicant in this case has participated in that program and has obtained a certificate, number 21 to be exact. So the retrofit has already occurred. The water savings has been ongoing since the retrofit occurred about a year ago. The only other retrofit program in the community is the county's prohibition zone retrofit program. And that, as you know, they've spent about $1.4 million of the $3.8 million they have. So it's perhaps not as robust as we would like. I will just say that the LOCSD, your district, you do not have a conservation program. You give out some shower heads and some hose nozzles. Again, I'd like to reserve a little bit of time for after public comment to maybe speak to some of the issues that are raised.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Okay, public comment.
This application is not ready. It's premature. And the reason why is because those 11 or 21 units that the gentleman was referring to were low income. They had to kick everybody out for a year before they could make an application. When they did get approval of a new development, which the developer eventually gave up on, it required 20% affordable housing or low-income housing. That is not included in this application anywhere. To me, it's an insult personally, because I'm an affordable housing advocate, and I've watched developers like Jeff Edwards come along and do every effort they could to tear down, and he just suggested tearing down these lower income units and converting them to more expensive ones. You know, I mean, to me, it's very disturbing to see this board put this item on the agenda, and shame on the general manager, and I'll say that one more time, shame on the general manager for doing this. This is wrong. I just talked to the lady that was visiting us from Cambria, who was a director, and she said this shouldn't even be on the agenda. We should not have new development until we have proof of a sustainable basin yield. So I respectfully request that you delay this decision till another time.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Keith Weimer, Los Osos homeowner. I'm going to have to agree with the last speaker. This basin has not been proven to be sustainable for the existing population. And that's the existing population with who's ever moved out. You know, so as I understand it, this particular property and the one that's being proposed, it's not a water transfer. It is a sewer transfer. And what supports that is that the person that wants this development, you know, got the retrofits. They went ahead and did the retrofit program. I wanted to let you know that the retrofit-to-build program, any retrofit-to-build program in this environment with the need for this level of conservation where everybody has to conserve, is bogus. What does it really do? It ends up with more water use because you can't go and retrofit somebody who hasn't retrofitted yet and have them have that little reduction for a period of time until they would have had to retrofit. Think about what this retrofit program actually does. They've retrofitted a few homes. Okay, so there's a period of time, a few years, where maybe there's a little water saved. Well, those people would have retrofitted anyway or had to by a certain point, so there's not much water saved, and there's certainly not water saved over a long period. So it doesn't offset the water use in this basin, and we don't know what the yield is. Until seawater intrusion is reversed, until we've hit that point where we can actually measure it, we don't know if there's enough water for the existing population, and the existing population needs to come first. If we can get the water down to where there is enough for other people to build, then that's fine. But until then, I think you set a very dangerous precedent by accepting a intent to serve on the basis of a retrofit to build program. You don't have to accept the fact that the county has passed this ordinance. You don't have to automatically say that, oh, the retrofit to build is something that allows them to build. You're in charge of the water, not the county. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Lindy Owen. This is a pretty complicated item. I think if Mr. Ohelski stepped out because he was one of the main actors in the last attempt, I think 6 years ago, to build on that property, and the properties were assessed for, I mean, I will agree, they were little shacks, and somehow we ended up with 12 credits or possibility to have permits for 12 buildings there. But we are not in a water moratorium. We're in a water crisis. So if Mr. Edwards has gathered the retrofits, which, again, we go back to what Keith just talked about, I just think we're very complicated in the due diligence that's been put forward with an offer to the community of open space, which the county has never given us. We're kind of in a dilemma about this whole situation. I think it's unfair to drag these people too much longer. And again, the question that I have is if they can build in Golden State and take those 12 homes and put the 12 straws in the Golden State Water District, what is the CSD Water District winning out of that? Maybe I don't understand enough about it. If the houses were, and I believe that they're not allowed to go back into those houses now that have been empty for all these years, but that's 18 houses, as I recall, 18 straws being used. So whether this is a good idea. I do have listened to the types of homes that they're installing and the amount of conservation that will be involved, and there is a good potential to build in a lot while they're designing these homes, whereas those of us that have older homes can't necessarily afford to do some of those retrofits, like the gray water from your bathtub and kitchen sink. So I think that it needs to be worked out, and I think we need to have a utilities meeting in order to do it, to get this clarified. I wish I had more information. Again, there's no water moratorium. There's always been the sewer moratorium, and now that the possibility of building with a sewer moratorium lifting and permission to move in early, there is no water moratorium. So how does that affect somebody that has already started a process and put time and money into it and purchased land that was had a promise on it, supposedly, during a time that we are admitting that we should not have had 1,140 homes allowed by the county back in 1983. So.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson, on your last item, you were contemplating bringing back, going to level 4 or 5 within months. This needs to be continued till we have that determination. And whether it's sewer credits or water credits, I think all the board members that have lived here for a while know the history of that property and when it was last occupied, fully occupied. He's right. There's been no draw out of that. And there aren't any 2,000 square foot homes on the Pine Street property. And what you end up with, it doesn't matter what type of water-saving devices you put in the home. A three-bedroom home has the ability to accommodate more people. A five-bedroom home, whatever, I haven't seen the list of what their plans are, but these aren't going to be two-bedroom, one-bath homes that they're building, going through all this trouble for. We're talking big homes, and bigger than the average home in the Prohibition Zone, on average. How that's not an issue that needs to be addressed, that there could be this increase in eventual consumption over what has been there in the past. You know, there's been a couple community members that have told me that they've taken pictures of all those shacks after the people moved out and have them waiting for the Coastal Commission, to show the Coastal Commission when, if this ever ends up there. This is not apples to apples. This is apples to oranges, big time. And until you come decide what your next step is going to be in the emergency water shortage plan, I think this needs to be continued. It's plain and simple. Seawater intrusion is not backing up, and we just heard, or we just saw in your utilities report, that you're looking at water consumption being by far the lowest it's been in the history of this district, down probably another somewhere between 12 and 15% this year. And seawater intrusion isn't stopped. It's not stopped. Lindy's correct. The 1,140 homes, whatever it was, that were allowed to be built in the 80s is probably why we're at this position right now.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, Jen Harper. I'm still in confusion why this property is connected at all with the Pine Street LOVR. It's not understandable to me. I believe Mr. Edwards is an agent for this property. I don't know that he can speak for the Pine Street LOVR stuff. So I think that clarity needs to be made. So I would also say that this needs to either be canned or at least pushed out.
Thank you. Okay, any other public speakers? Okay, Mr. Edwards, 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to clarify a couple things. There is a layer of complexity to this. First of all, the Water Board, by the way, who I represent the owners of Pine and Los Osos Valley Road, the Los Osos Investment Group in connection with the Water Board, and the Water Board analyzed a detailed submittal that I prepared, and they determined that of the 18 dwelling units that were there, it equated to 12 single-family residences. So the Water Board made that determination. You have that in your file. Secondly, as to occupancy of the units, they haven't been occupied for some years, and that's why the County of San Luis Obispo Planning and Building Department made a determination that insofar as water use was concerned, only two of the 12 retained those rights, and therefore the difference of 10 units had to pursue the Title 19 retrofit program to garner their water, which takes me to the Title 19 program. And I will tell you that since it has been in place, the Title 19 retrofit program has saved approximately 27 acre feet of water per year. This is every year ongoing. It equates to 158 new homes, but only 27 certificates for building were issued. So while the retrofit program is stated at a 2-to-1, you save two to use one, it's really closer to a 4 or 5-to-1 ratio of savings to usage. So this is a well-established program that is part of the county Title 19. So now, insofar as this new residence that's proposed under this application, I will tell you that it will use as much water as your Stage 5 allows. It won't use any more. These units have the highest efficiency fixtures, less than 1 gallon per flush toilets, 1 minute per 1 gallon per minute shower heads, and also hot water recirculation pumps, so you don't have to wait for hot water. These will be state-of-the-art water consumption residence. This residence will be, and again, it will be at the levels of Stage 5. Which takes me to the next point. You've heard about seawater intrusion. You've heard about the governor's executive order. You've heard about the ISJ, Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Stage 4, Stage 5. I respectfully submit to you that none of those are applicable here. This is a teardown. This is a demolition of a residence. So all of these stages, the lack of rain, the drought, it's just not applicable, because this applicant is not only saved enough water for his project, but for others. And you heard it, a 5-to-1 ratio. So again, this is not precedential. If anything, it sets a positive precedent. And so I would again ask your board to please approve this evening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's bring it back to the board for a discussion.
If possible.
Yes.
Right. You haven't heard from me on this, and so I'd like a few minutes to talk with you.
Sure.
As a water district, unless you've made some declaration under either Water Code 350, which is declaring a water emergency, or under your regulations that you adopted under 375, you are essentially duty-bound to consider the application and grant it, because if you haven't made those declarations, you're declaring that you do have the water. And so what I want to encourage you is, I think you have two options here from a legal perspective. One is to advance the prohibition in Stage 4 into Stage 3 that says we're not going to be processing any will-serve applications. Okay, that's one option. Move that from Stage 4 to Stage 3. Second, your option is to add conditions beyond what are in Rob's already well-conditioned will serve to establish. This board and this district has always been untrusting of the Title 19 and whether that actually produces the benefits that it talks about. You know, whether that program has all the science in the world behind it or not, it hasn't been trusted. So
we can ask for independent verification of the reduction in usage. You know, that they have to bring an engineer's report to do that. And we're aware of communities where it's not water neutral, but it's a net plus requirement. And, you know, if the board is going to consider these types of applications in the future, that maybe should be a requirement of that engineering report, that it actually establishes a net plus as opposed to just being neutral. What the middle ground on this is to condition the intent to serve along the lines that I just described. He is in the process of he is in process now. That you ask Rob and I to come back at your next meeting to discuss putting that prohibition from stage four into stage three, and then to determine whether or not this board's policy is going to be to accept intent to serves, but just not process them until we actually have water that can serve those parcels. I mean, but until we make a declaration under either Water Code 350 that we have an emergency, and that's your stage five, that's exactly what you're doing at stage five. And up until then, we're operating under your regulations under 375 and what we are approving and looking at the previous agenda item. If you're going to outright deny this application, you have to take that action first and move that condition forward to stage three, that you're going to eliminate any processing of any will serves. If you do that, you don't have to take the action of modifying the intent to serve, except he's in the process now, and he could legitimately have an argument that because he's in the process, he's entitled to be considered at the rules that were in existence at the beginning of it. But if you add the conditions that I'm recommending, that he has to actually establish the reduction by his own engineering reports before we'll grant the will serve at some future date, you've essentially taken out the county Title 19 program from the equation, and you're demanding the actual proof of either water neutral or net plus. Note that's my term, it's not a term of art. Second, the confusion that we had was that the staff level was that we didn't think that he was operating on any sort of water transfers from the Pine Street property. You know, I only know the anecdotal information that's been stated here, but for those types of water transfers to work, they have to be almost contemporaneous. And when you talk about historic, you know, I think there has to be some sort of evidence of what the historic use was. And, you know, so that we can actually evaluate that, as opposed to, once again, relying upon the county that said it was a reduction to two units of water that could be transferred. You know, all of these things, you have the right to occupy in terms of that kind of policy making. The county hasn't occupied the field, and it doesn't eliminate your discretion to require these things. So I've given you a load of information there, load of something. But the idea is, if you're going to deny this application, you have to add something, either under 350 and go immediately to stage five, or add a condition to stage three that eliminates the processing of will serves. Or you do both. You have us bring that back, but you have us modify this application along the lines that we're, you know, that you want, and then we can issue this and have it go forward.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Okay, Director Storm.
I have a question for Mr. Miller, and I agree with the statement that we're in charge of the water, and so it really should be our condition. Will it work if we put what Mr. Seitz has called a net plus condition? If we attach that condition to this permit, will we be able to say, with in truth, that we've actually added or reduced water consumption of the basin, or is that illusory?
If I'm understanding that correctly, if Paso Basin's a good example, they don't have for a lot of the agricultural areas, the engineer has to come in, provide a retrofit analysis and say, you know, this property, I do them from time to time, it's going to go remove 1,000 square feet of existing turf in order to build their ag accessory building. And it's a custom, you know, engineering analysis that, in this case, the county reviews. And so a condition like that could be added. You know, it's a little bit of chicken and the egg that somebody could say, well, that's a retrofit that you would have done anyways, ultimately. And so that there's a philosophical discussion there as to which how you want to evaluate that. But certainly in terms of an applicant providing an engineering analysis as to under existing conditions, they can save water by doing certain actions. You know, that can be evaluated at whatever ratio that the board determines 2-to-1, whatever it is. But I just want to make sure all the factors are out there for you.
All right, I guess my question is really this. Can we save water through this? We say no, and maybe something gets built in Golden State, and we don't have any authority over it. But if we take it in and we attach conditions that can be, if they can, I'm asking, if we can save water through this, actually, then that's a different question. And it's not relying on Title 19. That's a question. If it's relying on our own use of our own history taking, you know, then that's a different question. So that, I guess that's what I'm asking. Does that work?
Yeah. I mean, again, if you're going to assume that these properties are going to go develop in another service area under Title 19, in that case, yes, you could require more as a district and say bring back an engineering analysis that shows the specific measures you're going to take and how those are going to save water that's over and above anything the county would retrofit. You could do that. Got to definitely have the discretion to do that. And to the extent that those homes would have been built in another service area, then yeah, there'd be a water savings in that case. Again, there's a philosophical argument there.
Okay, so is there no way of making the chicken and the egg problem disappear by extra precaution, or is it just you're always going to be guessing whether people really would have done that? Would have done the retrofits anyway, and so there's no way to bring the baseline down low enough?
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I'd say that I haven't thought about what specifically that would look like. But I suppose there are retrofits to be had that would not be otherwise done in a normal course of action. I just would need time to reflect on those and figure out what those would be.
Okay.
And the applicant would have to propose something that we could then review and evaluate.
Okay.
I have a question. I've always had a problem with the transfer between purveyors. And how do you do a transfer from one to another? And is there a way to restrict Golden State by, or say, make the applicant provide a will serve letter which has in it a transfer to us in perpetuity or anything like that? In other words, have Golden State give up that straw.
Yeah, in Golden State service area, since we're dealing with this issue in a couple of different contexts with them specifically, they have a very difficult time denying, like S&T, a mutual, it's even worse, denying water service to a new applicant. They've got to get a high level of PUC approval in order to do that. And I've heard stories about them having to grant will serves in areas that were trucking in water, and those extreme examples, just because only the PUC can provide that status of denying any applicant a will serve. So I'm not aware of any mechanism that allows us to do specifically what you're suggesting.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions?
Yeah. Has there been a transfer of the water at 2150 Pine? An agreement reached that can be verified?
My understanding on this one, that there was no proposed water transfer associated with this intent to serve. It was only the fact that they were able to get a sewer credit.
Only
from the regional board. And that water was completely separate, and they were proposing to use the Title 19 program for this intent to serve. So no water transfer.
No water, but the agreement on the sewer has been done.
Yeah. The special condition is that they provide verification from the regional board that they have that sewer credit. And I've seen the letter with respect to the property that granted 12.
Okay.
Other questions, Chuck?
More of a comment, really, because I'm looking at option two is the option that I preferred, except that if we can move prohibitions on ITSs to stage three, maybe that's the way we do it. We should, by our own criteria, we're at a stage five. So we're playing semantics with where we're at in terms of our basin. If we acknowledge anything other than that, and stage five prohibits ITS letters, that's my inclination. Maybe with this one, since they're in the process, we do need to follow that middle ground and put some conditions on here that would require net plus, it's new to me, just to be certain, and move the ITS prohibition up to stage three. Maybe we should have done that with our last deliberation.
Okay, thanks. Yes?
I agree with Director Cesena.
Okay.
I think that sounds...
Mr. President, may I?
Just briefly.
I just wanted to agree that as an added condition, the applicant would be happy to provide additional documentation that could be reviewed by your district engineer that would verify the no net impact on the basin. So we would be willing to agree to that kind of verification on the part of your engineer. That's how strongly we feel about this. Lastly, I will respond to President Wright's question about Golden State. Once a development right has been removed from 2150 Pine, it cannot go back, even if Golden State wants to. And the reason why is special condition number 6 associated with a wastewater project, that once there is a property that has reduced or eliminated the development, the only way they can develop again is wait for the Habitat Conservation Plan, full basin plan implementation, and LCP amendment and certification. So Golden State, your engineer is correct about their inability to limit development, but Special Condition 6 clearly does that. Thank you.
Okay, can we come up with a motion here?
I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Mr. Seitz, can you,
Well, just one of the things that Mr. Edwards said, I think our engineer needs to evaluate their engineer's work, not perform the calculation and reach an opinion. So if you were to add a condition, it would be that he provide the engineering report, and he referred to water neutral, that wouldn't be an effect on the basin. It's up to you what that requirement is, whether it's neutral or what I just referred to as net plus, and I think I got that actually from Director Storm when we were talking about it earlier. But the idea is that it proves that there's actually a net increase in water available in the basin. And, that report needs to come from their engineer for our engineer to evaluate if you're going to do that condition.
Okay, I'll make a go at it.
Well, Mr. Miller, do you have a
comment? Well, for me, it helps to have a little bit of certainty as to what net plus means. Does it mean 2-1? Okay, all right.
Okay, well, let's take a run at this.
Okay, I move that first and foremost, we add the condition to stage 3 with respect to the will serve letters that's now in effect in stage 4. And second, that we direct staff to have another go at this intent to serve letter with new conditions that require, to our engineers' satisfaction, with substantial evidence that there is a net benefit to the basement in a 2-to-1 ratio, independent of any criteria used by the county, our own engineer.
Okay, so are you proposing granting the ITS with those conditions or not?
I don't know. I'm saying we attach them and it has to go back and be drafted again.
What I would suggest, since we have a grounds to continue it because we're going to modify our policy under 375, that this could be continued one meeting, that Rob gets to work on the condition that you just described to the intent to serve letter, and that we bring back at that point a modification of your action tonight to add that condition from stage 4 to stage 3 in regards to processing of well serves.
Okay, I accept.
Okay. That works. How's that sound?
Sounds like something from the Bible.
Okay, get a second on that, please.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Tarnowski.
Yes.
Director Cesania.
Yes. Those yes.
Is it right?
Yes. Okay, and along with that, I think the utility meeting that's coming up, I think that would be a good agenda item.
Sure.
Take a run at this. So we'll get that on there. Okay.
Excuse me. A run at what? What item are you wanting on the utility?
The ITS letter.
The intent to serve?
Intent to serve.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let's go on here. Future agenda items, number 14. Any future agenda items?
Yes. I would like the meeting place of the district's monthly meetings agendized either in private session or a public session, but I think the entire board needs to be in on that discussion.
Okay, thank you. Any other future agenda items? I'd like to see the creek discharge RFP discussion in a couple months. I think it'd be fair to bring that back.
Agenda item for this meeting?
For the board meeting. Anything else for the board?
Ad hoc work in the utilities area.
Okay, and be ready for an ad hoc report next time. Thank you. And Director Storm, anything?
Yeah, I indicated at the last meeting that I'd have the parks report this time, and I did turn in a draft, but it turns out I have one more meeting to take, and so I will give that at the next meeting if we have time.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, you can have that one. Okay, closing comments. Board members, Director Storm, we'll start with you.
I'm hot.
It is hot in here. Okay, so I get the Mission Country Disposal Extra Pickup Week announcement. Everybody get rid of all your junk and trash out at the street. April 13th through the 17th, you can take out 12 additional 32-gallon cans. I don't know where you're going to get them, but you could take them out there. 12 additional bags, bundles, and boxes can be put out on your normal pickup day. For details or schedule a large item pickup, please call 543-0875 between 8 and 4. Bulky items will not be picked up unless you call that number. Again, that's 543-0875. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Director Storm, you have anything? Closing comments? Oh, I'm sorry. We're going this way. Okay, Director Tarnowski.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, Director Cesania.
We had advertised openings for committee members, and we're accepting applications. Is that still going on? Is it over? Because I put up a couple notices around town, and I'll leave them up. Okay.
Yeah, it's ongoing. Thank you. I just want to remind the public, too, about the Los Osos Community Plan update. There's four meetings set, one April 13th, one April 20th, and May 18th, and June 8th, and they're all at 6 p.m., and they're at the South Bay Community Center. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.
was going to ask if you eat your lemons.
Huh?
You eat your lemons?